How's it going?
Okay. How you doing?
Busy day. Busy, busy day. Lots to do.
Okay. You're a busy day. I don't know. So how's the garden maintenance going?
The what?
The garden maintenance.
Oh, you know, it's fine. There's a big tree in my backyard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It broke in half in the accelerated winds from this afternoon and is laying very near to my pool.
Yeah. Do you want to describe? You want to paint a picture with words for the audience about what exactly your backyard looks like right now?
It looks kind of like a war zone. I don't know. There was some very strong winds and hail and rain that was coming at a bit of a sideways angle earlier from strong wind, and it snapped a very large mesquite tree in half on the other side of our wall, which is braced against the wall and still kind of connected to the base of the tree on the other side, unfortunately, so I can't just kind of push it out of the way. And it landed about 20 feet into the backyard, just teetering onto the edge of the pool. Maybe it wanted to go for a swim, but it didn't quite make it.
Well, that I wouldn't advise that, because it's a tree.
Well, trees like water. I mean, I don't think it'll like chlorinated water, but you never know.
Yeah, I'm no arborist, but I don't think that's a good idea, Dan.
yeah, mm-hmm. It's not great. I gotta call the city or the HOA or something to come take care of that.
Yeah.
While I wait for the city to show up and bring me a new trash can as well.
Do you want to tell the audience what you did to your trash can?
Not particularly.
Well, you brought it up.
Embarrassingly, I put some coals in there that were not fully coldened, and it melted my trash can into a puddle of green plastic.
So, listeners of this show will know that only a few days ago, Dan and I recorded an episode where he used a meat smoker mesquite wood and coals.
No, that was hickory.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Hickory? I think it was hickory.
Well, now you got mesquite, so...
Yeah, well, no, it's a different kind of... This one's not really ready for using in a smoker.
Okay, fine.
Plus, I would have to smoke a lot of turkeys to get that tree entirely out of my yard.
Yeah, well, you better get started, Dan. No tree like the present.
Can I... does Costco sell turkeys in bulk? I need, like, 50 of them, I think.
I'm going to guess yes, but I don't know. So, sure, why not? I don't have a Costco membership.
Yeah, I do. We don't go very often.
Well, that's why you don't have 72 waffles or whatever. What is the current census on your waffles?
You know, like, how long has it been since I told you we bought that the 24 pack, and I'm down to only 10 now.
That was Monday, and today is Thursday.
That was Monday when I bought the. No, it wasn't.
Yes, it was. Well, I mean, it was Monday when you told me about it.
I think I bought them Sunday.
Okay, so. Huge difference a day makes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. I'm not the only one that eats the waffles. Amanda eats some of them.
Okay.
A couple of them. I ate most of them.
Okay.
There's 10 left.
All right. And it was a 24-pack?
Yeah, a 24-pack.
Okay.
I eat two at a time, so, you know, that's only 12.
That would have been 10.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
Just saying.
All right. Well, I'm just trying to figure out the math on the rest of that.
You know, waffle math. It's complicated.
Okay.
Yeah, like, I'm going out of town.
Would you say it's a sticky situation?
No. No. I wouldn't say it's a sticky situation. We got plenty of syrup. I thought we were out of syrup, but luckily Amanda had bought a new thing of it.
So it was a spare fake maple syrup?
Yeah, it was a large spare fake maple syrup from Safeway in there, which was delightful to wake up to.
Now, is it the jug format or the bottle format?
It's like the bottle. It's just the slightly, skinny bottle, but the slightly awkwardly large tall, skinny bottle.
Okay. Okay. It's not shaped like a person, is it?
It's not shaped like a person, no.
Okay.
So it's not Safeway in and of itself is not a person.
Well, it's the Safeway generic brand?
It's a generic brand syrup.
Okay.
We go through it relatively quickly. So,
okay.
You know.
Yeah, I mean, aim high.
gotta be cost effective with our maple syrup consumption.
Mm-hmm. But it's not maple syrup. It's high fructose corn syrup.
maple syrup flavoring product.
Uh-huh.
Mm.
It's good stuff.
What was the episode title we had that was maple something something? Growler of maple syrup, is that what it was?
Yes. A growler of maple syrup, which a fan of the show, Brandon Mathis, was enamored by, because he actually had a growler of maple syrup.
he took that lovely photo posing with it.
Yeah. That was back during our Winter Wonderland days in December, when all the good Christmas movies are out to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Back when it was a reasonable temperature out here in Arizona.
Mm-hmm. It's hot here too, but it's kind of not really worth mentioning because it pales in comparison to your weather. but Burbank right now is like walking into an oven every time you go outside. So it's charming because it's got like that really strong hot breeze, which just is so very drying and painful to your face when it hits you. Like a big gust of it. I'm looking forward to the weather shifting slightly from that. It'd be nice.
Yep. I'm familiar with the weather of which you speak, but I get to go to San Jose next week, Monday, Tuesday, briefly, which will be delightful for a number of reasons, one of which being the weather. Although, actually, when this comes out, it will have been like 2 weeks ago that I went. Man, that trip was so great. Remember that?
Yes. Well, I mean, this show's these last couple episodes are like really lame time capsules because we're recording for the couple weeks that I'm going to be gone too, and so everybody really has nothing to look forward to. There's no current events here. We're not talking about the Apple TV that was just released. Although I know everyone's tuning in for that. Yep, that's it.
I hope I have a new trash can and I no longer have a tree in my yard by the time this episode comes out.
Well, don't aim too high, Dan. You want to make sure you set goals that you can achieve. Something small and manageable.
These are the big goals for me because I've got enough to worry about, let alone a melted trash can and a giant tree in my backyard.
Yeah, you want your tree to make like a tree and leaf?
That's a reference to that one movie.
It's a reference to a really lame joke. But speaking of lame movies,
this is not a lame movie. How dare you, sir?
I was not enthralled. I laughed a couple times.
You should. It's funny.
You build it very highly as a very funny movie.
Well, only because it's come up in conversation numerous times, and you say, "What's that about?" And I say, "Don't worry, it's funny." That's pretty much the extent of my building up of this.
I don't know. You kept mentioning how you wanted to talk about the movie, and then so we did.
Well, we've been bending back and forth about movies for, I don't know, months and months, and this has always been one of the ones in rotation of like, hey, we could always talk about that. We could always talk about that. It's not that I meant to really necessarily build it up, but I like it. I mean, I've seen this movie on TV many, many times because this used to be one of the ones that they played on, I don't know, Comedy Central or something, and I would watch it whenever it was on. So I've seen a lot of the movie a lot of times. I've rarely seen it all the way through, but I do own it on DVD somewhere, I think. I don't think I've ever watched the DVD, but I have it.
I've always found Michael Keaton's manic smile and pancake makeup to be off-putting, and so I've never watched it.
It almost looks like he's got eyeliner on in this one, too, doesn't it?
I'm pretty sure that is a lot of eyeliner, Dan. Not almost eyeliner. It's eyeliner.
Well, just trying to read through the Netflix compression on this one because
his pink shiny lips too.
It's not the greatest transfer.
He is covered in makeup, Dan. Head to toe.
It's the lighting of the time. It's 1935.
Well. Except I don't think they went quite as heavy with the makeup for the other characters, and I wasn't quite sure why, if that was like an artistic choice or something, but for some reason his is especially egregious. So
well, he was a ripe old age of 32 years old, so they really needed to make him look younger.
Well, he looks older than 32 in this film.
Hey Joe, how old are you?
Let's not talk about that. But I think I look younger than Michael Keaton in this film. I think it's because he has like that little thin but poofy hair thing in the front.
Yeah, like, you can tell he's struggling with some hair thinnage up front, and it just gets kind of long and kind of out of control throughout most of the movie.
Yeah, it's unflattering, I would say. And just very heavy makeup, also unflattering. But this was not what I was expecting, although I wasn't really sure what to expect other than it seemed like an old-timey thing. As you can tell from like the poster and the box art or whatever. Just seems like an old-timey kind of 80s period piece of the 20s or 30s. And it kind of is. and it kind of has some off-the-wall comedy elements and zaniness to it. Except I found the pace of the zaniness to be really slow and the distance between each of the jokes to be really long. And so I just didn't really, it didn't grab me, as an amazing comedy. It
something, about audience sophistication and 1984 speed of jokes. I don't know.
No, well, see, I even liked, our recently discussed Val Kilmer movie, more than this one. I thought that was snappier than this.
And you thought Top Secret was snappier than this? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I thought that was snappier than this. This feels slow in comparison to me.
I don't know about that. There's lots of jokes in here in every little bit of it.
There are jokes, but it feels like there's just distance between them. Like you have to take a couple steps and then there's a joke.
Well, they try to put a story in it too.
Okay. You mean the story that is completely scattered all over the place and doesn't really like have a single narrative that takes you all the way through? That story?
Yes, that story.
Okay.
This film
Top
also...
Top Secret did not have a good narrative.
Top Secret
honest.
Had a non-existent narrative that disappeared even further like halfway through the movie.
Yeah, it just kept doing whatever it wanted to do. So this movie has it more together than that, but I still found it to be a little scattered.
Fair enough, but this movie directed by Amy Heckerling, director of such things that you may recognize as Clueless, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, European Vacation. I didn't realize that she had done all of those movies.
I didn't either, because I don't think I've seen Fast Times at Ridgemont High, and I know I've only seen part of European Vacation.
But you're a fan of Clueless.
Yeah. There was a recent interview with her in Variety, I want to say, about the style of Clueless. So, you know, that was good.
Does that add some additional context around why this movie sort of is the way it is?
No, it doesn't. I don't find this movie has anything to do with Clueless.
One of the writers also worked on Blazing Saddles, which, I mean, it's got kind of a Mel Brooksy kind of feel to it, aside from being slightly less zany, I think, than a Mel Brooks movie.
Yeah, it's less zany than Mel Brooks. It's less zany than Abram Zucker. It's just overall less zany than many things. And it kind of doesn't have a singular kind of comedy that it does.
It's really just a vehicle for Michael Keaton to be a little weird.
Yeah.
Which is fine with me. I like Michael Keaton.
Well...
That was a long pause there.
I'm not a huge fan of Michael Keaton. I can take or leave Michael Keaton, especially when Michael Keaton is a little overly worked up. And not that I'm saying that he is in this particular role, but he is. And when he doesn't get reined back in, he can be a little much.
That's certainly one way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
But rather than make this a rehashing of the Birdman,
didn't you find some of his like grimacing, manic, eyebrow twitching faces that he was making like after every beat? Like, didn't that start to like grate on you at all during the watching of the film?
No, not at all. Because that's his character. He's got this like fake kind of senseless ego that makes no sense.
Hmm. Hmm. Okay.
I love the face he makes when she says, you know, your last name's an adverb, because it's obviously never occurred to him. And he just kind of tries to roll with the punches, even, you know, because he's a cool guy. But he's not. He's a doofus.
Yeah. But, I mean, I don't know. I'm not saying it's bad. I thought it was going to, like, blow me out of the water since... You'd wanted to do this since like last October.
So. Well, considering you've gone 30-ish years without ever having seen this movie, you thought it was going to be some hidden classic that you had just managed to miss your whole life?
Well, I mean, you're not the first person to ever bring up Johnny Dangerously, although it's not often mentioned. So I thought maybe it was just like a, you know, top secret kind of a thing where it's just something I hadn't seen but is well regarded.
Hmm.
And I don't know. Like, there's some funny stuff in here. Like Danny DeVito, I quite like. of course, Dom DeLuise is the Pope.
Mm-hmm.
Quite like him. And they're just like little bits that come and go. Like, they're not in the movie for any long duration of time, especially not Dom DeLuise. He shows up and cashes a check relatively soon. And then there's the sort of amalgam of like wanting to do a bunch of different like bits that's in here, and some of the bits work okay and then some of the bits don't, like the bit where they have the sort of like hygiene film, but it's supposed to be like a 1950s hygiene film, but it's anachronistic because that doesn't work with the timeline, but that was just sort of mildly amusing in that I can't believe they paid somebody to animate that. and for anyone who hasn't seen the movie, it's
exploding testicles.
Animated exploding testicles who are touched by a Betty Boop knockoff. So, wow.
Yeah, I had always remembered that portion of the film as being like goofy and just kind of funny, but having not seen this movie in a long time, now watching it with sort of fresh eyes for the first time in a long time, it doesn't make any sense. Like, they don't even try to like tie it into a moral. He just like shows it to his brother like it's a self-contained explanatory thing. Like, why was there no additional context added to that? I didn't understand it at all. It was there, it was weird, it was kind of funny, but it doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I said. It's just a disjointed little, like, they wanted to tell like a funny bit, and so they put it in here. I personally would not have included it, because it doesn't really come up again later in the film, except for they have Tommy, the brother, have this character issue where he's basically been, you know, raised by his mother and sort of coddled and has instilled in him this deep sense of Catholic guilt about actually having sex. And so they mentioned that before the hygiene film, and that's why he gets shown the hygiene film. And then he's like, oh, well, I'm going to go back to law school. And then he goes and he gets married, and then they have a brief sex scene in the janitor closet. It was brief, by all accounts. And then
so mentions his new wife.
Yes. Yeah. and that's it. Like, it's not really like a big thing in the film, but they spent a lot setting that up for having that hygiene film in there.
They needed to have him overhear Joe Piscopo saying that Johnny Dangerously is actually Johnny Kelly, his brother. And they had to work backwards from there. So they worked backwards to the hygiene film about exploding testicles. That's how it works. You start with the punchline of in the janitor's closet, and you work backwards to exploding testicles.
It wasn't really a punchline because it wasn't funny.
Well, it's a plot point.
Yes. Sorry. Okay. Plot point. There we go.
Exploding testicles led to the plot point.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, you know, I don't even want to like recount the film, but I mean,
not at all.
No, it starts with the pet shop, and there's somebody who wants to rob the place, and he invented an alarm system, and there's a talking parrot like it's Dr. Doolittle. And
of course, they bookended it with this device where he's explaining his life story to some would-be young criminal, and he's of course going to tell his tale about how he grew up in a life of crime, and it's not a good idea, and look where it landed him, and blah, 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 and there's supposed to be a moral at the end of it, but there's kind of not because he's still rich and, you know, kind of a criminal.
Yes.
Well, not really a criminal. He's got a pet shop, but he's rich.
Yes.
And then from there, they go back to, 1910? He's telling the kid about his life back when
Yeah, back in July when he needed to bundle up, according to his mother, who for some reason is like 60 years old in 1910, and his mother.
She's 29 apparently, but they cast a 60-year-old woman because you know it was hard living back then. I did not remember, and I laughed aloud when he mentioned that there was a law that people who wanted citizenship had to spend at least 4 hours outside their home walking around in the streets of New York with hats on.
Mm-hmm.
That's that amused me. Apparently not you.
Eh. And then the medical bills, and that's why he gets into his life of crime. $49.95 this week only. And the back and forth with Maroney, which would be entertaining if Maroney were actually the villain of the piece, but he's not. And we eventually do away with Maroney. And we do away with Peter Boyle's character. And so then it's like, okay, we've lost both of them. And then we have Vermin, who was introduced as a child actor in the very first little flashback scene, and is now Joe Biscopo. And so then he's actually the villain. And then that really comes into play basically in the third act. And I don't know. It's just weird.
Yeah, they were lifetime rivals. And then when Peter Boyle decided to retire because the mob war had gone too far and he had almost been blown to bits in his own bathroom, mistakenly.
Yeah.
He was not holding his anatomy. He was holding the pull of the toilet.
That wasn't funny.
You didn't find it remotely amusing?
No, I did not laugh at that scene because it was so obvious what it was, and it was so obvious what the revelation would be. So...
Okay. What about the robot? The robot Maroney that came in with the Tommy gun.
I didn't laugh at that. I had some questions.
You had some questions.
Yeah. I mean, talk about an anachronism. Where exactly does one purchase a robot that looks like a person that can be shipped in a box that can fire a weapon?
Exactly. Well, he's a very wealthy club owner, so presumably he could have a bespoke machine gun robot made.
Okay.
It even had a metal suit with pinstripes.
Why not just send somebody in a box?
Because that person would get arrested or go to jail?
What does he think happened to his robot? What about robot rights, Dan?
What about robot? I don't think the robot's terribly concerned with it. I mean, the robot couldn't even walk, and it's probably pretty heavy because they brought it in on a dolly. That was what's his name? Is that one guy from... why can I never remember his name? Anyway, he brought it in on a little dolly there, so it was probably pretty heavy. So I don't think they're just gonna be dragging him off to jail.
Okay.
Taylor Negron, good lord.
Okay, I've never heard of that person.
You know who Taylor Negron is?
Do I?
Yeah, he's been in a million things.
Okay.
Although I think he has a book where basically he just says like, "Yeah, I'm that actor that was in everything that you just don't remember." He was big in the 90s.
It was the style of the time?
He was on Friends. He was in ER. He was Rachel's boss on Friends, I believe.
I don't remember.
Anyway. Good lord, he was in a lot of movies. 131.
Okay.
Anyway. So you enjoyed Roman Maroney, but you were unamused by the passing of the torch, where by then our two main characters were just Joe Piscopo and Michael Keaton vying for the title of head of the Dundee gang.
Yeah, it didn't really do much for me.
Hmm.
I mean, I liked Peter Boyle and his ridiculous flask in his pocket that saved his life. Because as we know, one must always carry something in their front pocket of their jacket because it will save you from a bullet. And I think that's really the lesson to take away from this here, Dan.
Carry a cigarette case with gum in it because, you know, smoking will kill you.
Mm-hmm. As you can break the fourth wall and attest to the audience.
Yeah, there's a nice little random fourth wall breaking anti-smoking ad in there.
Yes, as I said, random bits in this film. And not just the nuts. And so the film just keeps having stuff. Like the tipping the guy every time he says something nice about his mom. And the whole thing with Irish names and the cleaning lady thing, and just it was like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was all right. And then the guy who keeps getting hit by newspapers, who loses his sight.
No, he was blind, and then he gains his sight, and then loses his hearing, and then gets his hearing back and forgets who he is.
Yes. And do you know who that was?
No.
It was Boothby from Star Trek The Next Generation. He also made a cameo appearance twice on Star Trek Voyager.
That's, I did not know that.
Yeah, he was a groundskeeper of the Starfleet Academy.
Oh, I was going to say the groundskeeper of the spaceship? Did they have bushes and stuff in there?
No, but Keiko O'Brien was a botanist on board.
You're just saying names. I don't even know who that is.
Keiko O'Brien, that's Miles O'Brien's wife.
Sure. Who's that?
Com Meaney. You've seen him in stuff. you would know Com Meaney if you saw him. You'd be like, that guy from that one thing.
I think I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. Speaking of Star Trek, there's also Joe Piscopo, who was a guest on Star Trek The Next Generation Season 2 episode The Outrageous Okona with our boy Billy Campbell from The Rocketeer. When we did our Rocketeer episode, I neglected to mention his turn as The Outrageous Okona, because I hate that episode so much. But it was recently on television, and Jason will watch Star Trek The Next Generation when there's nothing else on, but only if it's already on TV and never from Netflix. And it doesn't make any sense, really. I tried to explain this to him. I was like, you know, we could just watch this without commercials because we have Netflix. But good luck with that one. So anyway.
It's easier to bail when it's already on TV. I do that too sometimes.
Yeah, there's something about the serendipity of it all. I don't know. So it turned out it was the Outrageous Okona episode, and I said, oh no, this is a bad one. And then within 15 minutes, he was also agreed that it was a bad one. And Joe Piscopo is doing his Jerry Lewis impersonation, which is dreadful. And everyone who hasn't had the chance should definitely partake of that so that they can go, yes, Joe, that was a terrible, terrible Jerry Lewis impersonation. And I think
was that one of his reoccurring bits on SNL? Because I know he did, Sinatra was one of the other famous ones he did with Eddie Murphy.
I have no idea. He was just dreadful. He's awful. I don't like him as an actor. I've never seen his stand-up comedy outside of him trying to do jokes about doing stand-up comedy as an actor. So I can't evaluate that, but I can evaluate his acting, and it is all bad. All of it.
There's not a single thing he's been in that has been worth it?
No, neither one of the two things that I've seen him act in have been good.
Now I'm struggling to think of anything else he's been in except Saturday Night Live.
Maybe there's a reason for that, Dan, and maybe because he's just terrible at it. You know, he does not do a good job here as Mr. Vermin.
He's a psychopath. Well, also, as noted by the fact that he has a handicap sign for his car that says he's crazy, which is one of the jokes that I will admit is not terribly funny.
No, that is ableist, Dan. Also just in poor taste and dumb and not funny and silly, but not in a good way. And so there's that. And his whole spiel of blah 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 blank once, which comes up four times in the film, where you sort of like Mad Libs fill in a relative and and a verb.
That's probably the most long-lived joke from this movie that is used by people who have seen this movie, aside from as Todd mentioned on the internet, Roman Maroney's butchered curse words.
Yes, ice hole. Yep. You cork sucker, or what was it?
There was cork sucker. There is Fargan sneaky bastages.
Yes.
Sunum botching, which is a bit of a tongue twister.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that's probably the extent of them.
Yep.
Yeah. And then I like after he gets brought in by Tommy the DA and grilled about stuff. He keeps his cool up until Tommy asks him an SAT question about a train leaving New York and accelerating 15 miles per hour on its way to Chicago. How long will it take? And then they deport him to Sweden. And he says he's not from there, which is the headline of the newspaper the next day.
Yes.
They deliver a few plot elements via newspaper headlines, which is sometimes funny.
Well, I mean, it was the style of movies of the era back then. A style of the time, as it were. And they were trying to, you know, do that as an homage. But didn't...
Fargan War.
Yeah. Yikes. But, you know, I do like Danny DeVito, who was unceremoniously killed. And then
as a corrupt district attorney.
Yeah, his death was mentioned in the newspaper in one of those bits. But I still didn't understand the commercial thing. We have to look this up, I suppose.
Yeah, as not old enough people, we're not actually certain what commercial it's referencing. It says the headline was district attorney dies in commercial because he has a red smoking jacket that Johnny gives him as a gift, and then a bull jumps through the window of the restaurant and presumably kills him.
Well, it was for some kind of malt liquor.
Oh, that makes sense. See?
But I don't know any malt liquor brands. So
Colt 45? I don't know.
What does that have to do with the bull?
You'll have to ask the advertising agency.
Uh-huh. Way to take the lead there.
Sure.
So,
as noted by the chat, Rice says Schlitz, and now I think I may have found the commercial.
Is it a Schlitz commercial?
It is a Schlitz commercial. Let me see if there's a bull in it.
What the Schlitz?
Oh, dear.
Wait, is there a bull?
This is a horrible commercial.
Oh, dear.
Right? So,
that's dreadful.
That's not a joke that was probably even in good taste back then. So, the more you know. Turns out, it was a commercial for Schlitz. And now we know that. And we're not going to link to that because that's terrible.
Yeah.
Good Lord, advertising agencies in the 80s had some problems.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, back to the movie. So he's killed in a very peculiar method with a bull jumping through a window. And then, of course, Tommy Kelly is now the district attorney, and he vows to go after Johnny dangerously.
Well, I think the bull might have just been angry at him because he was serving milk-fed veal. So
That was that was the previous scene when he was trying to bribe Tommy, and he had a like a game show, like spinning around wall that had a list of prizes that Tommy could win if he just played ball.
Yes, especially like the oven could cook a turkey in a whole day,
just under a whole day.
Yeah,
it's nice. It's about as effective as the smoker in my backyard.
Yeah.
Which only took, I don't know, 7 hours or something.
You're living the dream.
Yeah.
According to this movie.
I'm living the 1935 dream of cooking a turkey in less than a day.
And there was, of course, let's not forget the first scene Danny DeVito is introduced when Tommy walks into the DA's office. And there are white high heels which slide up underneath the desk as Danny DeVito gets up from behind the desk. And, of course, that's also... not in good taste.
And a joke that's almost directly stolen from Blazing Saddles.
Oh. I don't even remember that one.
Yeah, Mel Brooks. Remember he was the governor? And he wasn't wearing pants?
Oh, right. Yeah.
And his secretary wasn't wearing a shirt?
That happens, they don't do anything that quite happens in a few of his movies.
He's not wearing pants?
Yeah, in Spaceballs? Yeah.
Pants. Mm-hmm. Pants are funny.
Yeah. Well, at least his pants weren't on backwards.
Who put their pants on backwards?
Remember when they used the transporter? We have to do Spaceballs. We have to do Spaceballs.
Yeah, I haven't seen Spaceballs in a really long time.
We have to do Spaceballs.
I know that's another dangerous one to talk about for the audience.
Oh, it is a terribly offensive film.
I just meant dangerous in that will offend people who love the movie.
Oh, I don't care. There are a lot of people who actually don't like it, surprisingly. But I like it.
That, like, don't find it funny, or they, like, actively don't like it? Because I find that hard to believe.
There are people who actively don't like it.
I mean, I don't think it's his best movie, but it's funny.
There are some people who say everything from Spaceballs onward was terrible. And I would say hold it. I still like, two of the things after that. I like Spaceballs and Robin Hood Men in Tights. Dracula Dead and Loving It, not so much. That didn't do anything for me.
Is it who's in that?
Leslie Nielsen and guy from Ghostbusters and L.A. McBeal.
Oh God, that was Mel Brooks?
I thought so. Well, I have to check.
Wow, I did not realize that.
Yep, directed by Mel Brooks, produced by Mel Brooks, screenplay Mel Brooks, Rudy DeLuca, and Steve Haberman.
Hmm. Well, this Johnny Dangerously is certainly better than that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Better than Dracula Dead and Loving It.
I would put it up there against Spaceballs too, personally.
I would not. Like Spaceballs more.
You didn't grow up watching this one like I did.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny.
I did not.
It's the era. It's the funny era. You know, they're making fun of the 30s, which I think is obviously easy to do, but I find this movie quite humorous. And of course, we've got all kinds of cameos. We didn't even mention Alan Hale from Gilligan's Island is in here. He's the desk sergeant.
Yeah, the out of focus German angle, Dutch angle, as they say, desk sergeant.
Yeah, when when he escapes prison later by assembling pieces of a Tommy gun to escape, hold up the warden. They put what is it, shelf paper all over their car, and they keep peeling it away so the cops won't know. And he's reading out over the radio every time they make a change, because apparently he knows, and it's like a joke.
Yes, it's not that good. And but the shot is seriously out of focus. It's not even remotely in focus. I don't understand what they were thinking.
Yeah, I don't know. Aside from the duckies and bunnies, that it's a weird scene. Didn't they do a little bit of a split screen at one time? I think there's some less than stellar optical effect work in this movie, because I don't know if you noticed the opening was the studio logo or whatever. It like freeze frames and then kind of dissolves, but the grain freeze frames, so it's like really bad looking.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah, I'm not sure how they did that.
It's just not good. there's a lot of old Hollywood, Los Angeles, for New York backlots that are used for, you know, all the new, I think it is literally the New York Street in Paramount backlot that's used a little bit in there.
I've been there.
I walked on those streets, and they were also used in Star Trek for many occasions. But it doesn't mean I want to walk through them in a movie.
Would you ever walk from the New York set through the New Jersey set all the way out into the hills of nowhere?
Is that a reference to something?
That's the thing that happened in this movie. Remember when he was talking to Lil for the first time? They're walking home, and they walk from New York, and then you see the sign that says they're in New Jersey, and then they keep walking, and he says, "Where the hell are we?"
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they walked to a different state. It's a joke, because they were just going for a casual stroll to get to know each other, but then they walked for so long that they were in another state.
Oh, it's hilarious.
I can tell you're really on board with this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you like Michael Keaton's breakdancing?
No.
No.
Did you like Mary Lou Henner?
I did.
Mm-hmm.
Why should I not?
I just wish they gave her character a little more focus.
Like, well, I mean, she had to disappear for a portion of it. She was one of the several plots in the movie.
That's what I mean. Like, she starts off as a woman that he likes but can't get, which also means he likes her more. And she's sort of too smart and too cool for him. And then, sure enough, they get together for a walk and they get to know each other. And then there's the disappearing for a long time. And then there's the she's back again thing. And then there's their lifestyle. And then there's when he's in prison, and then she's with Joe Piscopo as part of a plan that seemingly went nowhere. So,
well, she got the inside information about when Vermin was going to assassinate Tommy.
Yeah.
It all makes sense. There's a plot to it.
It did not feel focused, and it did not feel tight, and it didn't feel like her character meant anything you know, it, like, because she just did whatever the scene called for. Like, for some reason, the whole exchange of, that's why I came, you know, to Chicago. And it's like, oh, you're in New York. You know that, right? And she's like, oh, well, same diff. And then she's sort of concerned. And I watched that scene. And I was like, okay, so I know I didn't laugh. Was this written as a joke?
I would assume as much. I think most of the things in this movie were written as a joke.
Okay, well, did you laugh?
I found it amusing.
I
mean, there are degrees of humor in this. Like, they try to pepper every bit of it with some sort of silliness, whether it just be in goofy writing or actual, like, you know, practical jokes or whatever. But it's just a goofy parody movie.
Okay.
You didn't like her turn later when they're basically, what, like, suburban mob wives or whatever with Al Capone's wife coming over asking to borrow a cup of bullets?
I thought it was sugar.
No, she asked for a cup of bullets.
Oh.
That was the joke.
Oh.
And that's why he said maybe Al's going to have to stay home tonight and slam the door.
Okay.
Did you watch the same movie I did?
I don't know.
Maybe not a great movie for a late Thursday night viewing.
No.
Yeah. Was there anything redeemable in it?
No, I mentioned a few things. Like, I like Danny DeVito's stuff of how they set him up as this obviously corrupt person. Because that's always what Danny DeVito's best at. And
they made Joe Piscopo pretty hated as well, which, as he should be.
Well, I mean, it was pretty easy. Did you also notice that he kept holding, like, one hand a little up? Like, a little, like, half T-Rex action going on? I don't know what that was about.
No, I didn't notice that.
I was, the whole time I was watching him in every scene, he would just, like, have one arm that was just sort of, like, bent up a little bit with, like, the hand dangling down. And then, like, sometimes he'd switch from one hand to the other hand, and he'd be like, is there just, like, some sort of rule that he always has to have one hand up like that?
No, was he, like, holding his lapel or something?
No, he wasn't holding anything. It was just dangling, but it was just up. And so it was just like, this is weird. I don't know.
That's just his flair as a psychotic, terrible person.
Mm-hmm.
And in his, you know, once he's brought back into the gang later in life and they introduce him and, you know, of course, he's immediately terrible. He even admits as much. He says, you know, it fulfilled a lot of people's predictions about me. I've become a real scumbag. He says a joke that would certainly not fly today. His 88 Magnum, they made it for him special. And he describes it as being able to shoot through schools.
Yes.
That's terrible. I mean, later he says something similar again. It goes through armor and a person and a tree outside and a wall and stuff like that, which, again, gets the point across that he's got a giant stupid gun and he's a stupid person. But, oh boy, that is a not terribly subtle way to put that across.
No, it was not good. I did like when he's sort of cleaning his gun and it accidentally goes off and shoots the guy. But it doesn't shoot the guy. It shoots a hole through his blazer. But for some reason, totally missed him.
No, it hit him. And that's why when Michael Keaton's doing his anti-smoking ad and he falls out of the chair and dies and he goes, see, it's not actually the smoking that killed him. It's that bullet that just went through his chest.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, that is quite funny where he goes, oh, you ruined my jacket. He puts his little finger through the hole and goes, see? Yeah. That's good. How many hats you got? It's a lot of hats. 180 hats. No. No humor at all.
Eh.
His mob gang has a dental plan.
Okay.
They're doing pretty well.
Okay.
Mm.
At least they don't have to, like, take down a couple walls.
Yeah, you're referring to the bit where they fly a biplane over top of Roman Maroney's club and just drop kind of something that looks like a lawn dart.
Yeah,
as
but
a bomb.
But it is a bomb.
Up.
Yes.
Yeah. And it blows up the club, but not Maroney or his henchmen.
No, people are remarkably impervious to explosions in this film.
You know, it's they didn't have great bomb technology back in the 30s.
Or the 80s.
Sure. Or the 80s. Apparently they had biplanes, though.
Yes.
And you say I'm the one that's no fun.
Yeah, great stock footage of biplanes.
Yeah, no, they had that that close-up prop where it was not flying, and they shook the camera.
Yeah, and then they had the car that was not driving, and they shook the car.
Well, that one I actually kind of liked, the when Tommy gets in the car accident because they glue the gas pedal down and cut the brakes, and his car goes 100 miles an hour and rolls down a hill.
I didn't care for that. That was probably the worst car crash I've ever seen.
It's very terrible.
The only redeeming part of that was when he keeps accelerating and the radio goes faster. Because mm-hmm. that just doesn't make any sense. Speaking of the radio, there's the scene later on where they get their exposition from the radio, and to make a point of the fact that radio devices like that are so convenient, they actually have the radio announcer announce exactly what it is right when they turn it on, and they switch channels and hear the rest of it for the weather report, and then turn it off, and then turn it back on again to hear the where it is.
Mm-hmm.
And they ask aloud because they didn't know where it was, and then it's you know, sort of answered through the radio.
Yeah, weather's going to be great tomorrow when DA Tommy Kelly goes to see a movie at this whatever theater, and he turns it off. Well, what time? Turns it back on. 10:45. Click.
Yeah,
that's
the Savoy.
Of course, the Savoy, which mm-hmm. apparently their snack bar serves whitefish, which is peculiar. Ma Kelly gets what she get, like some candy and a drink and then a whitefish.
Yeah, talk about your random bits.
Just a fish on a napkin as a snack in a movie theater.
Well, but see, this is the thing though, is like that feels like it's trying to be like Zucker Abrams Zucker kind of comedy, but it's not delivered like that. Like that's not like a you know, like a fast, flashy thing that's just sort of like it just lies there like a dead fish, so to speak. And I it didn't have any punch when that happened.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, you know, it's an overall silly movie with this sort of vague plot of you know, the mob where somebody's trying to take over and kill his brother and all that stuff.
Yeah, and I was surprised by the opening credits where I was like, is that Weird Al Yankovic?
It totally is Weird Al.
And it was. And it
does
two
songs
credits.
For the movie, I think, yeah.
Yeah, and I was just like, okay, well, the rest of this doesn't have Weird Al in it, so that's kind of disappointing. So.
Oh, it would have been a better movie if there was more Weird Al in it?
Well, it would have been funnier, I would assume.
you would assume.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's generally considered to be a funny person. Maybe he would have livened it up a little. Like, as it was, the scoring in the film is actually, while period appropriate mostly, it plays it straight rather than being, like, played for comedy. So, you know, just would have been another angle to get some chuckles.
Yeah. Remember that time I saw him at that restaurant?
Weird Al?
Yeah.
At Pizzeria Mozza?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Remember that?
I recall you recounting the story to me before.
Yeah, that was cool.
Okay.
Did you find no humor in the fact that his mom has like random terrible illnesses like every week?
I thought it was kind of funny.
How the doctor had to do a thyroid search because they couldn't find her thyroid.
Yeah, and well, it was okay. I mean,
what about the mountains of laundry that she did as her career in her apartment?
It's fine. She didn't really do anything for me as a character. And then when
she punched Tommy.
Well, yeah, but that didn't really do anything for me.
And she went and bribed the maid to get her to tell the truth.
Yeah, I liked how everybody had exactly the amount of money that she asked for every single time.
Yeah, she was having a good year.
Yeah, and there was, of course, the wedding scene where Tommy's getting married, and she turns to Mary Lou Henner and says that she goes both ways.
Yeah. Now that we're family, I want to reveal something to you or tell you something.
Well,
or whatever.
Like family, they didn't get married.
They didn't. Mm-mm. They didn't get married at any point.
Mm-mm.
Huh. I guess they didn't, did they?
Nope. Which is weird.
Yeah. Well, then, you know.
Maybe they're saving it for the sequel.
Then she would have to change her name from Lil Sheridan to Lil Dangerously, and that would be weird.
Mm-hmm. Well, a last name like that, you got a lot to live up to.
Yeah. So, what was that? Like, Burkholz or whatever? Don't change your name?
Yeah. Something like that. I'm struggling. I don't have anything else.
Yeah, I like this movie. You're ruining it.
Okay.
Nah, I'm kidding. I enjoy this movie. It's a fun one to watch when it's on. There's amusing bits, and I like Michael Keaton. Maybe that's the problem.
I don't like Michael Keaton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you ever going to be able to watch him again after Birdman?
I mean, I did. I watched him in the RoboCop movie.
Oh, that's right. He's in that. That didn't work out very well, though.
No. That didn't win me over.
Hmm. What does Mr. Keaton have to do to get you on his side?
I don't know.
Has he ever been in Star Trek?
No, he's never been in Star Trek.
See, if they put him on Star Trek, would you appreciate that?
No, because I'd probably just be annoyed that he was in it, because he just needs to dial it down. I feel like he generally overacts. I don't feel like he plays it subtle. And everybody loves his Batman, but I don't like his Batman. He's not my Batman.
Well, I don't like his Batman, but it's not because of him.
Mm. Because of Mr. Burton?
Yeah.
Do you even like the first one, or is it... Because there's some people who like the first one but feel the second one went over the top.
The second one was certainly over the top. I haven't seen the first one in so long I would need to see it again to place judgment. Although all I can do is I can just picture Nicholson blaring that terrible 80s rap where he's running around throwing paint on pictures, and that scene just like, ugh.
Oh, the art gallery scene is so dreadful.
Where he's got the beret on, yeah. He's got the lighter. Like, that is burned into my head. It's just... horrible, horrible cinema.
Yeah, and the beatbox, and then they have their parade and the music there. It's just like, oh, goodness.
I mean, part of the parade, I guess, was kind of amusing because they were using it to spread whatever that green gas was or something, and then, you know, the bat plane came through and all that. But
well, the start of the parade was certainly not that interesting. That's the part I'm talking about.
Yeah. The things I remember about the film are not super positive. Maybe it's because the ones that left the strongest mark were the bad things.
Yeah, it has stuff in it that I like. It never gelled for me. I liked the animated series that was spawned from this, but is not directly related more than this or the sequel. And I actually like Batman Forever better than both of the Tim Burton ones. And I know that's sacrilege because nobody.
Which one is that?
That's the one with Jim Carrey and Tommy Lee Jones as Two-Face.
Right.
Yeah.
Really? You like that one better?
Yeah, because it knew what it was and it was going to go camp all the way.
I don't know that it knows that it knew what it was. Like, Carrey's stuff got really kind of overly serious for a little while.
Not really.
Yeah, I don't know. When he's like getting ready to jump out of the, was it like 1,000-story tall building, like into the little, what do you call it, the waterway below?
He wasn't going to jump. He pushes the boss out.
Hmm.
You're misremembering that scene.
Yeah, I'm misremembering, but I still just, it was.
No. A lot of people don't like the movie, and especially don't like Jim Carrey's over the top acting in that. I just found it to be entertaining. Now, the sequel to that is an abomination and worse than all of them combined. And no one can really dispute that. And that is, of course, Batman and Robin, which inexplicably is not actually just Batman and Robin, but Batman and Robin and Batgirl. Mm-hmm. It was an unfortunate time in Alicia Silverstone's life for her. As Batgirl, you know, coming off of the amazing success she had in Clueless with Amy Heckerling, just to bring it back.
Yeah, you want to talk about somebody whose acting is not particularly engaging.
Yeah, that was not good, what they did there with that thing.
Yeah, Alicia Silverstone. She's still doing stuff these days, right? Is she on a TV show or something?
I don't know.
Thank you for that. Yeah, has she ever been on Star Trek?
No.
No. I don't know what else I can draw out of you on this one.
No. Struggling.
Yeah, you've got French senioritis. This is our last one, and then you're out of here.
Yeah.
Although by the time this comes out, you'll be on your way back, basically, right?
Yes. Hmm. No. Because it's actually that Monday that I fly back.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully you enjoyed your trip, and hopefully you do enjoy your trip. So both the future and past tense of that sentiment.
Yes. Have a nice trip. See you next fall.
No, it's still going to be summer by the time you get back.
Oh.
Shucks. At least here it is. It's going to be summer till December.
At least you didn't trip me.
No, I wouldn't do that because you're very tall and you'll fall for a very long ways and hurt yourself.
Okay.
All right, let's wrap it up then.
Okay. Awkward goodbye. The end.
What else would anyone expect?
My bathtub's filled with Perrier. What can I say? This is a life. I buy a dozen cars when I'm in the mood. I hire somebody to chew my food. I'm an up and leave mobile dude. This is a life. They say that money corrupts you, but I can't really tell. I got the whole world at my feet, and I think it's pretty swell.